in the something that's becoming very popular in the yoga circuit is what we just did, kirtan. Kirtan is a Sanskrit word that, just as we did, calling and responding, or vibrating transcendental sound vibrations is kirtan. And it goes well with yoga, because the whole purpose of yoga, another Sanskrit word, it means linking with the Supreme. There are different types of yoga, and this is, we can say, kirtan yoga. By sound vibration, the whole of the ancient wisdom of India, or the Vedic teachings, is based upon sound. And by hearing transcendental sound, it does something that's unique. It's different than material sound, where this material sound, like the sound and the object are different. Like if you say water, 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 doesn't quench your thirst because the sound vibration and the object are different. But transcendental sound, the sound vibration and the object are the same. And so if we say Krishna, a name of God, then that sound vibration and the object, the person, that the abhinatvam nama namino, that the name and the object named are the same. Krishna and the person Krishna are the same. So by by kirtan, by chanting of a mantra, which we just chanted, then we're in Krishna's presence through the sound of his holy name. And another term besides kirtan is this other term I just used, mantra. Man, the Sanskrit syllable man, refers to mind. And tra means to release. Triate, or to release. So the purpose of mantra is simultaneously to release the mind from material conceptions that which the mind is very tightly holding on to, material conceptions. Release the mind of material conceptions and allow a spiritual vibration to enter. So, by chanting a mantra, which is what we just did, it precedes commonly hearing of message like Bhagavad Gita, or some teaching from the Vedic literature. It releases the mind of material conception and opens the mind to a spiritual conception or spiritual sound vibration, or through spiritual sound vibration. So, it's very soothing and pleasing. And it's experiential. There's no mental adjustment required. Doesn't matter what culture you're from, what language you speak, there's no material pre-qualification. You have to be highly educated or wealthy or born in a certain family or a certain country. All you have to be a spirit soul, and that we all qualify. Everything that's living within is their spirit soul. So even the trees and the insects and the birds and anything that has a spirit soul, anything that's alive, receive spiritual benefit through that sound vibration. So gradually through that awakening of spiritual consciousness, releasing the mind from material conception and inviting spiritual sound vibration, the dormant consciousness of the soul awakens. That's what we just did. We can do some more later too. Okay, so I was asked to speak about this topic. I have a number of topics that I offered, things that at university settings where young American students don't know what this Vedic teaching is, so this is one of them. And I think Northwestern University was the place I presented this. Yes? So, recognize the fellow here in the picture? George Bernard Shaw. So if you Google, "You are what you eat," his name will pop up because he coined that phrase, "You are what you eat." Now, I haven't read the context of his expressing that, but at least a common notion of "you are what you eat" is that the conception that says we're this body, and so whatever you put in your body is what you are. And it's important that you, if you want to elevate your consciousness, George Bernard Shaw, by the way, was a vegetarian. He was very particular about what he ate. But there's another level, and that's consciousness. The foods that you eat affect your consciousness, and that's where the focus of this presentation is going to go. It'll discuss some of the other things, like this is right off of a web page, "You Are What You Eat," where you're a hamburger head from eating hamburgers and your body will be like that. And here's another picture. Be ready for a little surprise. This is a picture of the idea, if you inflict pain and suffering on another living entity in order to satisfy the palate, then that same pain and suffering the other living entity has to undergo, you also have to undergo in a future existence. You are what you eat. So, the idea where we're going is, it'll start with vegetarianism and the merits of it, but it'll also go to the spiritual side of vegetarianism. Something that everybody does universally in all parts of the world, everyone takes part in a nice activity of eating. And when people consider what to eat, there are different factors, certainly things that they like the taste of, and what's the nutritional value and the convenience of it, what's the cost, and some things we eat just out of habit. We don't really think too much about it at all. It's just we do it because it's part of our daily routine. But there are higher principles involved in deciding what you eat, like mercy, compassion, and the effect upon consciousness. So, from a, I'll use this word Vedic, and I'll refer to it again and again. And the word Veda refers to the ancient Sanskrit literatures of India, written 5,000 years ago, and that body of literature is called the Veda, or the Vedas. So, from the Vedic perspective, there's a purpose, sensible purpose. We want to have a fit body. We also want our minds to become purified and the duration of our life. It's nice to select foods that aren't going to debilitate your life, but give strength and duration of life. And with, there's feedback with this? Can you adjust? Okay. When with the facilities of modern science, they can research in different ways about food, how the food is manufactured, how it's packaged, transported. Now it's by law, you have to have the nutritional components within the food, how the food is preserved, how long it's good, if you put preservatives in the food, or when it has to be served by, and otherwise its expiration date is such and such. But how the food that we eat affects our consciousness is a whole other area of consideration. In academia, consciousness studies are becoming, in the last 5-6 years, becoming a little more prominent. Some means research money is being provided for graduate students to examine consciousness and study it and teach it. But it's something that's not so well understood yet. The things that we, this is again a Vedic perspective, but our senses are gathering information from around us. Our seeing, our smelling, tasting, hearing, and things that we do and decide to not do. All those factors affect our consciousness, and consciousness directly influences our behaviors, our speech and our thoughts, and our subtle and our gross behaviors of life. Consciousness is a very important, although it's subtle, it's a very important principle that's pervasive in all of our life. And one of those things that we do every day, eating, it has a profound effect on our consciousness. This is a little, I hope the somebody might need to adjust the sound coming from those little speakers. But this is a study, modern study on how food affected students in Appleton Central High School. You'll hear this in this little video clip, that Appleton Central High School was for troubled students, meaning, you know, not that their learning capacity was less, but, you know, kind of, they would get themselves in trouble. I don't know how you say it otherwise. So, let's see. This is a case study of how diet directly affects consciousness and consciousness affects behavior.
I guess that's the end of it.
This is a a clip from a larger documentary that goes into this, you know, expanding the same message that for our purposes what you eat affects your consciousness and your consciousness affects your behavior and your, from Barbara Stitt's point of view, your ability to perform well to your capacity. These ideas aren't new ideas. Pictured in the left side are some texts from the Vedas where these principles were spoken of thousands of years ago. Consciousness is affected by what we eat, but also when we eat, where we eat, and from whom we eat. Here's some passages from Bhagavad Gita where foods in the mode of goodness are described, and then other foods. Foods dear to those in the mode of goodness increase the duration of life, purify one's existence, and give strength, health, happiness, and satisfaction. Such foods are juicy, fatty, wholesome, and pleasing to the heart. There's the verse at the bottom in Sanskrit. Therefore, from the Vedic perspective, foods were selected from the possibilities of things that one can eat that would best aid health and increase the duration of life. That's foods from the quality of goodness. There's a little slide here on milk, specifically given special value in the Vedic wisdom. It has exceptional nutritional value that science has more recently demonstrated, the contents that are within the food, in the milk. From the Vedic perspective, it teaches this, that finer brain tissues are nurtured by taking of milk, and in that when finer brain tissues are nurtured, then higher thinking capacity or more subtle thinking capacity evolves. And in Vedic times, ancient times, many yogis lived just on milk. And what does it take to produce milk? Something that we can't use, just grass. The cow takes the grass and chews the grass and produces milk. And from milk, a whole wide range of milk products can be made. Overall, in the quality of goodness, foods in the quality of goodness is a vegetarian diet. So here's some of the categories of vegetarian foods. They're food groups, not presented here, but when you become vegetarian, or if you want to maintain a proper diet in any case, taking a variety of foods from food groups and mixing them in good proportion, proper proportion, helps to maintain good health. And another thing about spices, from a Vedic perspective, not only taste is there within spices, but there are medicinal values. Like one that I just read, that is turmeric. So commonly we take turmeric with vegetables. Or I just recently had a cold, still have a tail end of it. And milk with turmeric decreases mucus. I didn't know that, but the Vedic teaching expresses that. But turmeric also serves as a blood purifier. Just as golden seal. Anyway, so there. If you use different, if you have knowledge of what the spices do for health as well as for taste, then foods in the quality of goodness do everything that Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, that foods in the mode of goodness do. In addition to what you eat, there are these other components of eating, your lifestyle, and the consciousness you're in when you're eating. Like, for example, this is something that our spiritual master taught us, that when you're eating, conversation should be light. Shouldn't be, you know, eating and working. We have a very pressured life, and sometimes we do that. It's not good. Eating should be where the sound vibration that you're hearing and the topics that you're discussing and the mood is, it aids in digestion and assimilation of your food. And if it's, you know, very tense, then you're not going to digest or assimilate. You'll create ill health even if you have good foods. Eating with at regular times is important. And that they're snacking between meals is not recommended. These are just some health tips about eating that affect consciousness. How much we eat, not fill it up till you can't eat anymore and then you stop eating, that's not recommended. But whatever that capacity is, half, and then another quarter of water and the other quarter air. This is something that Prabhupada taught. Periodically, from Ayurveda, it particularly mentions once every 2 weeks or a fortnight to fast. What that does is undigested foods, which otherwise turn into toxins, can be burned up by the body when you fast. So it's ideal to fast twice a month. We do that commonly on Ekadasi. Minimally, our fasting is from beans and grains. So it's just very easily digested foods, or more complete fasting. The comment at the bottom was also mentioned in the little video clip, that if one eats in the quality of goodness and foods in the quality of goodness in an atmosphere that's clean and in the quality of goodness, it reduces other types of health problems. When foods are in the mode of passion, it affects consciousness in a different way. Foods that are too bitter, too sour, salty, hot, pungent, dry, and burning are dear to those in the mode of passion. Such foods cause distress, misery, and disease. Foods prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten, food that is tasteless, decomposed, and putrid, doesn't sound very attractive, and food consisting of remnants and untouchable things is dear to those in the mode of darkness. So here's a little chart summarizing not just what's in Bhagavad Gita chapter 17, but other places. The features of the quality of goodness are higher thinking, cleanliness, general all-around satisfaction with life, self-control, wisdom, truthfulness, honesty, simplicity. These are attractive qualities. And by eating foods in the quality of goodness, it promotes these qualities of goodness. Similarly, eating foods in passion has different effect. Symptoms of the mode of passion are intense endeavor, mind and senses are agitated, desires and longings are, they know no limit, greed, envy, and the mode of darkness has its qualities listed over here on the right side. So, this is a Vedic perspective on foods affecting the quality of our consciousness. Modern experiments reflect some of the same things. So vegetarianism has its benefits. It has its health benefits. Overall character in the quality of goodness is increased, so it makes for a wholesome character. It's economical. There's a vast variety of food that it's not just, you know, rabbit food, become a vegetarian, just eat salads. There's vast variety of foods. Here's a little the word vegetarian, the derivation of the term vegetarian is from a Latin word that means whole, sound, fresh, or lively. So the implication of the word vegetarian is not only from certain food types or groups, but a balance of foods so that it makes both health sense and philosophical and moral sense. There's some conceptions that people feel, that some people feel, they need to eat meat because they do lots of hard work. So here's some studies from Brussels University indicating that vegetarians are able to perform physical tasks 2 to 3 times longer than non-vegetarians before tiring out, and can fully recover from fatigue 3 times more quickly than non-vegetarians. Other health benefits: there's lower cholesterol level in a vegetarian diet, and health problems related to obesity are reduced. Chances of cancer are reduced by 40%. Diabetes chances are reduced or restricted, limited by a vegetarian diet. Kidney and gallstone problems and high blood pressure problems. That's a nice, robust list. This American Medical Association, some years ago, determined that 90 to 97% of heart diseases can be prevented by a vegetarian diet. That's a big number, the AMA. So health benefits are there. Is there sufficient nutrition, food value? And the answer is yes. Here's a little chart of how much protein there is in soybeans, cheese, and meat per weight. So there's more protein, and it's the kind that's assimilatable by the body. The kind of protein that's within meat, although you might evaluate it in a laboratory, what happens inside the body is it's not assimilatable generally because of things that we'll discuss in just a moment. So during the process of converting grain into meat, 90% of protein, 99% of carbohydrates, and 100% of dietary fibers are lost. So if you want protein, eat soybeans and cheese. When meat is consumed, there's things that are fed to animals that go into the meat. They are what they eat too. So tranquilizers, hormones, antibiotics, carcinogens, and 2,700 other drugs are part of what you avoid by being a vegetarian. The human anatomy, let's see if I have, yeah, there we go. So one Swedish scientist, I don't know how to properly pronounce his name, Carl von, we'll say Lin. Man's structure, external and internal, compared with that of other animals, shows that fruit and succulent vegetables constitute his natural diet. Just an anatomy remark by this Swedish scientist. The AMA says, most of the mankind for the human history has lived on vegetarian or near vegetarian diet. So we'll start with here. That's where the eating process begins. The human teeth are far more suited for... There's some canine teeth, in case that option is something that somebody wants, but largely the teeth are very similar to the vegetarian or herbivore animals. And then in the stomach, the acidity in an animal that's a carnivore is 10 times stronger than this acidity in the animal that's an herbivore. And the acidity in the human stomach matches that of the herbivore. That means when you put food in a stomach that doesn't have sufficient acidity, it doesn't break down. And then it goes and sits in these intestines that in an herbivore is generally 3 times the body length. Excuse me, 6 times the body length compared to 3 times for a meat-eating animal. That means it doesn't digest and it sits in the intestines and rots. And you have problems when that happens. And so the anatomy of the human, the hands of the human, the stomach of the human, the teeth of the human, the intestines of the human, the anatomy of the human is that of an herbivore. So it's suited for us to be vegetarian. And cost... Here's some statistics. If people adopted vegetarian diet, 60% of gas for transportation can be saved in the U.S. Interesting number. Each person who becomes a vegetarian saves 1 acre of trees per year. Be a vegetarian. Save the trees. On an average, a vegetarian requires about 1,200 gallons of water per day. Wow, that's a big number. But compared to a non-vegetarian, it's 4,200 gallons per day. Now, these are people that are environmentalists that are coming up with these numbers. I can't vouch for how they came up with such a large... I mean, 1,200 gallons of water per day? Anyway. It takes... If the whole world became vegetarian, we could feed a population 16 times more than we're able to feed at the present balance of consumption. Some famous vegetarians: Einstein, of course, George Bernard Shaw, Sir Isaac Newton, Benjamin Franklin. I forget what Benjamin Franklin's statement about vegetarianism was. Something very witty. I forget. Athletes, some persons say, you know, you have to have a lot of protein to be a good, strong athlete, but athletes and other famous personalities were vegetarian. Long, long lists of those. The varieties that one can produce from vegetarian foods, of course these are all Indian names, but different food that you can produce from a vegetarian diet. It's not bland at all by any means. Long, long list of variety. Now we'll enter the spiritual dimension of vegetarianism, because one of the things that almost invariably, presenting something on this topic at a in a university setting, someone will say, well, you know, you're vegetarian and I'm eating meat, but you're one of the issues you have is if I eat meat, I'm taking the life of an animal, but you're taking the life of a plant, so why is that any better? Heard that one before? Huh?
Many times.
Many times. So, there's several answers to that. One of them is, when you take the apple from the apple tree, you don't kill the tree. You take the tomato from the tomato plant, you don't kill the tomato. When you take the grain, the wheat, from the wheat plant, it's already turned brown, and it's just you're taking the grain from the wheat plant, and so forth. But there are some vegetables that life is taken, like a potato or a carrot. And so the answer to that question is, largely you don't take the life of a living entity when you're a vegetarian. But even in the course of, let's say, within the tomato there's seeds, or within the apple there's seeds, or the grape there's seeds, and there's potential life within those seeds. And you know, you can be very conscientious and take the seeds and try to preserve the seeds or plant the seeds or something, but you're taking away the potential of some life for that plant. So the spiritual dimension therefore enters, where at least from the point of view of devotees, we say we're not just espousing vegetarianism, but rather those foods that you eat you should first offer to God. And by doing so, when you take the apple from the apple tree and offer the apple to God, then indirectly you're assisting the tree to do some service to God, which otherwise, without human intervention, the apple tree is just going to produce apples and not have any spiritual benefit. Or the cow that produces milk and offering the milk to God, the cow is getting spiritual benefit, or the tomato plant is getting spiritual benefit, or the vine that produced the grapes, that living entity is getting spiritual benefit. And when foods are offered to God, then whatever, by that act of offering, not only the entity that's providing that which is being offered is benefited, but the food becomes freed from karma, and one who ingests that food is also becoming purified by the very act of eating. So here's a message from Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is explaining to Arjuna that here's Lord Vishnu. He's overseeing material nature, and for all living entities, the moving and the non-moving varieties of living entities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead directs all the activities of material nature. So all the elements of creation are under the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in turn, we offer those, the fruits or the production of what comes from nature, unto God. By that act of offering, sanctifying. I was having a discussion, it was a lively discussion, with an Orthodox Jewish young man that came to our temple in New Jersey this past Sunday, and he was describing their conception of the same thing I'm just describing. You know, the blessing of food, making making foods kosher by a rabbi making a, saying proper prayers and blessing the food. It's a similar principle as what I just described. So when things that are supplied by God's arrangement from the land and from the host of living beings that produce things, the cows and so forth, we offer those things to God. He says He is supplying to us for our necessities, and in turn we offer them unto Him and accept as mercy or prasad. We use that word, Sanskrit word prasad, means mercy. So we're all, even the animals and the humans, we're dependent upon what's produced by nature or by God's arrangement, not from what comes from factories, but what comes from God. And all this is provided by Him. And so within all cultures of the world, there's some act of saying thanks unto God. The Oktoberfest or harvest fests or the season of harvest where things are offered to God in thanks for the bounty that He has supplied. In Vedic culture, it's not just harvest season, it's every day, or whatever it is that we accept as the maintenance of this body, we first offer that to God as an offering for His enjoyment. And then the spiritual blessing that comes from God in the form of the sanctified remnants from that offering. And the categories of, this is directly a verse from Bhagavad Gita, foods and the quality of goodness, even something very simple, a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, if those things are offered to Krishna in love and devotion, then He'll accept it. And if He accepts it, it becomes, this word on the top is prasadam. So this is, you can say, spiritual food, or food that has been blessed, or food that's been offered to God. And that becomes then the mercy of God. And though it's those foods and the quality of goodness that, when offered, Krishna will accept. So, taking of sanctified foods or spiritualized food or spiritually offered food is the spiritual dimension. And that then directly affects consciousness. It helps to purify our consciousness or spiritualize our consciousness. Here's a verse from Bhagavad Gita, from the third chapter. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is first offered for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment barely eat only sin. So, in the act of offering something to God, it's not that He's poor or hungry or needy. Rather, it's a loving gesture from our side. He doesn't need anything, but it's for our benefit that we make offerings. And by making those offerings, the item that's being offered, the food and the quality of goodness, becomes blessed or sanctified. And thus we benefit. So this is like the summary section. When we're cooking, not only the right ingredients, but the consciousness of the cook is very important, because it's important because it's being offered to God. And so when we're making the offerings, it isn't making something that will be satisfying for your palate, but making something as an act of sacrifice to the Supreme. Just like the singing that was going on before. So we have some of our young devotees here are very talented musicians and singers. And it's part of the same point here. It's not just, I have a nice range in my voice and I can sing very nicely. That's the wrong reason. The right reason is that it's pleasing to the personality of Godhead. The purpose of kirtan, or singing God's holy name, is to honor and praise and bring pleasure to the Supreme. So when one acts in that consciousness, the spiritualizing effect is increased, and same with cooking. The cooking should be an offering to the personality of Godhead. And it's even described directly within the Vedic scriptures that the consciousness of the cook is transferred through the process of cooking, and when you eat foods, you're digesting or ingesting the consciousness of the cook, because it's transferred through the act of cooking. So be careful where you take your foods from. In Vedic culture, those who are cooks should be qualified persons in goodness, or priests, brahmanas. And in our temples, the training that I received is those persons who are doing the cooking, because it's to be offered to Krishna, should be the qualified brahmanas, or persons in the quality of goodness. Others can be there to assist. They can cut foods and measure things and clean things. But the person who's touching the fire and doing the cooking is a very special service, or it requires a special consciousness. And the place where you're doing your cooking should be always very clean. Your consciousness should be clean. Your clothes should be clean. Your purpose should be clean. And so the thoughts of the cook is very important in the process of preparing the food. And we should be conscientious about the quality of the ingredients. Mentioned some of these already. In the Vedic perspective, these ancient teachings of India, it's the duty mentioned at the bottom, is the duty of the householder by culture to be sharing. So when they prepare their foods very carefully, they're always in the thought of seeing that others around them are not hungry. Of course, here in suburbia, that's not really a problem. But by culture, being charitable with, I'm receiving bounty from God, and I should be concerned in a charitable way about the well-being of others, as I'm receiving that others are also receiving the bounty of God. Just a cultural comment. The spiritual benefits of taking food that's first offered to God, or prasadam, the body and the mind both get spiritually nourished. Sinful reactions are eliminated. Past activities that one may have wrongfully done, they become eliminated spiritually, like an antiseptic, both subtly and even medically. From our scriptures, there is a nice story of Narada Muni, a great sage, who became a great sage because in his childhood, actually it was even in a previous life, in his childhood, he took remnants of the prasadam, the spiritual sanctified food of great sages who he was serving as a small boy, and gradually he became purified through their association and taking their prasadam. This is a long story. Jamunacharya, I'll tell it short. Jamunacharya was the son of a very, very elevated brahmana. And he was so brilliant that a circumstance arose where the king had a very proud scholar in his court, like a learned pundit. And the learned pundit had a regular program where he would insist that all other learned people give him gifts and charity. And if they were unwilling to give him gifts and charity, then they had to challenge him in debate. And if they lost, they would lose their life. He was a mean guy. and very, very proud, and very, very bright. So the king kept this pundit in his court. So one time, when Jamunacharya's father was not there, a representative of this learned pundit came to Jamunacharya's father's home and asked for his annual, you know, gift, like a tax, because of his brilliant scholarship. And Jamunacharya said, "My father's not going to give you anything." And he said, "Well, if he's not going to give, if you're not going to give the pundit anything, then he'll have to come and meet him in debate. He said, "He doesn't have to come and meet him in debate. I'll come and meet him in debate." And so the messenger went back and told the king, "This learned Brahmin, he's not going to give any charity. And he says his son will meet you in debate." And so, anyway, long, I'm making it too long. He went and debated with the pundit. They brought him in a palanquin. He said, if I'm going to debate with the king's pundit, they should bring me in a palanquin. So he sent a palanquin. And he defeated the king's pundit. The king was, thought this was really an amazing situation. The queen said, "If this young boy is defeated by your court pundit, then I promise you I'll never disagree or argue with you ever again." He said, "Oh, well, I'll tell you what. If my court pundit is defeated, I'll give to this young boy half of my kingdom." So when the young boy defeated the court pundit, he gave him half his kingdom. So he became a king. And Jamunacharya's father, who was this learned Brahmin, his son completely lost his spiritual practices and became a very qualified young king. And he was in great distress. So on his deathbed, he asked one of his students, a very intimate associate, "What my parting words, my deathbed request, is please do something to bring my son back to his spiritual practices." And he left his body. He died. And so that elder student had a plan. There's a particular vegetable. Does anybody know the name? It has a Tamil name. Some name. Of a particular vegetable that if you eat this particular vegetable, it produces the quality of truthfulness and goodness in your character. That would be a nice vegetable to have every day. So he went to the king's kitchen and said to the cook, "Here's some vegetable. Please offer it. Very special, rare vegetable. Put it in, make a special preparation and offer it to the king." And he did that every day for a year. And so much the king became accustomed to having that preparation that he liked very much. And then one day, 1 year later, this vegetable wasn't there on his plate. And he had said, "How come?" He had, "Bring the cook. Cook, what happened? This vegetable preparation isn't here." He said, "I don't know. There's this one saintly person that comes every day and brings the vegetable, but he just didn't come this morning. So I don't know. I couldn't prepare it for you." He said, "Really? He's been coming for a whole year. Find out who this person is and bring him here to meet me." So he got audience with the king. And when he got audience with the king, he said, the king asked him, "Who are you?" He said, I'm very dear to your father. And your father told me before he left this world, he has some very special treasure for you. But you have to come with me to get it. I'll show you where it is." He said, "Oh, great. I could use something more in my treasury. I'll go with you. I'll bring my whole army." "No, no, 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 no. Just you. Just you." So they were going to a temple that was many miles away and took many days to get there. In the course of getting there, the elder man, his father's student, was teaching him Bhagavad Gita. And as he was hearing the teachings of Bhagavad Gita again, his spiritual remembrance came back. And it all started from the mode of goodness that was being promoted by his eating this particular vegetable. So that's what that story is. By unknowingly taking prasad from a saintly person, his heart changed. And his devotion was revived. So, we invite you to take prasadam on a regular basis and spiritualize your existence and become very happy. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So before we take prasadam, any comments or questions? Anyone? Yes.
Maharaj, most of the time we are eating prasadam just like without any consciousness. So how do we cultivate that consciousness while eating?
Well, continue eating. And it'll be purifying whether you're thoughtful about the act, but the very question that you're raising indicates you're on your path of becoming thoughtful about the act of eating. You know, we often do things mechanically, routinely, absent-mindedly. So be present. By the hearing process, as well as by the eating process, by coming in contact with that which is purifying, it will help to purify your existence in any case. And gradually, through hearing, then you'll be more mindful of what it is that you're doing. It's just like kirtan, just like chanting. It's melodious, it's very pleasing, but it's Krishna. The sound vibration is Krishna. It's direct association. So if we become mindful of what chanting is while we're chanting, it's more effective. Same with prasadam. Your question was a how-to question. Just be present. Be thoughtful of what you're doing.
I just wanted to check if we need the lights.
Okay. Yes.
In the corporate world now, I've seen like 90% of the people get the frozen stuff heated up in the microwave and eat every day. You know, what might be the fate for that? You know, if you continue eating like that, what will be the situation? What will be the consequences? Just, you know, since you...
You're commenting or asking?
Asking. You know, what might happen? You know, this continues...
Well, certainly their health is not going to be very good. But their consciousness will also not be... You know, it'll be... It puts fuel in the tank, but it doesn't put sharpness in the quality of the person, or refined, elevated, subtle qualities in the character of the person. It doesn't promote the quality of goodness, to say the least. And when the quality of goodness is promoted, it's not that one becomes less productive. The opposite. It makes the body dull and sluggish, like that student was saying. he was saying, make one feel, by this other diet, I feel much more alert and energized. And you keep a diet like that day after day after day after day, and it has its long-term effects. And the other way around also. One eats foods in the quality of goodness, and it cumulatively has a nice effect. Yeah.
Maharaj, it's a related question. You may have already touched on some of that. Is also something, is the way I'm processing it, is something more fundamental which requires a change in lifestyle, especially for those who are in the corporate world, with all the microwaves and high-pressure environments. How do we and how does one participate in the corporate world but also go through that lifestyle change to be able to make this happen?
We have to be strong. There has to be spiritual strength. It's not just making a mental adjustment. There has to be genuine spiritual strength. And when there's genuine spiritual strength, you can be in that environment and not be influenced by it or drawn into it. You have to be like challenging and confrontational. Just be who you are. Be a person that is principled. I've been told, maybe you can agree or disagree that it's true or not true, but in the corporate world, persons that are principled, that's respected. Persons may not understand what that principle is, they may not agree what that principle is, but one who lives by a principled way of life is respected. So, especially, and this is true not just in the corporate world, but for those in the student world over here, if your performance is excellent, your clarity is excellent, your demeanor is friendly and thoughtful and courteous, and you have, in short, spiritual qualities. Wow. To be a principled person, you don't have to be a stick in the mud. You have a sense of humor, and you're sharp and bright and clear thinking, and you get things done, and wow. Maybe I can think about being a disciplined and principled person myself. I kind of like those qualities. So it can, without directly saying anything, just by the character that you carry, you can be helping to influence in an uplifting way those in the work environment around you without compromising your principles or thinking in a haughty way about I'm a spiritual person and they're not, looking like some snobby condescending attitude, but just be happy and by that being sharp and being happy and productive and alert and qualities of goodness help to influence the work environment. You help create the environment in that work environment. A culture within the team.
May I ask you a question about cow milk?
You want to ask a question about cow milk?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
In India, we find the cow milk very pure, like they are eating grass and some cereals, but not non-vegetarian things. But the fodder in America and Europe, they are mixing the fats of pigs and so the milk is different.
Okay, you're not making a question, you're making a statement.
No, but I am asking question about the milk, cow milk.
Here's my experience in India. You have to really search to get pure cow milk. Because generally it's either mixed with buffalo milk or mixed with water or both. And they'll tell you it's pure cow milk.
Yeah, mixed cows there and we are feeding them.
Okay.
I also tempt two cows. So I have that experience and that milk is different. And here when I buy the milk, that is smelling something.
I'm not surprised.
Somebody told about the fodder, cow fodder.
Yeah. Well, one of those slides shows, hormones and antibiotics and so many, because it's, with the dairy industry, that's not cow protection, it's industry, those kinds of things happen. A lot depends on where you are, but people that are selective can find something else. To find something pure in India or in America or in Europe in our present age is a challenge. The best is I've got a couple of cows in your backyard and you take care of them. That's the best. Then what's happening. what they're, that the concern that you're expressing is, you know, is statistically, it's not just persons in this room, but overall, the whole industry, it's not just the eating, it's the so many things to get the cow to produce more, to inject hormones, and to keep them from getting sick because they keep them in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They give them antibiotics and so on and so on and so on. But, you know, the whole industry is not wholesome, not just the fodder that they eat. So there are persons like you and persons that generated these statistics. I didn't. There are persons that are conscientious and there are alternatives. It costs more. And it takes some time to search for it. But once you find it, it's much more wholesome.
Yeah. So one of the slides mentioned that it's also important to see when we eat.
Yeah.
So can you elaborate more on that?
Well, minimally, it's important that you eat at certain times of the day. Whatever suits your schedule depends on, you know, some persons have different work schedules or class schedules or whatever. But regularity in eating habit is important. That's of utmost. And going down a little bit more, common is a breaking of the fast, the show for eating in the morning, so before work, and then a midday meal that's, you know, universally common, lunch, and something in the evening. So eating a big heavy meal in the evening from a Vedic perspective or Ayurvedic perspective is not so good. The major meal better is midday for health purposes and digestion purposes and resting well at night purposes. That's not what goes on commonly, but that's from a recommended method from Ayurveda. Going down a little bit further with Ayurveda or the science of eating, the mixture of foods becomes very important, along with, you know, when, but what you eat, which with other foods at which time of the day. I'm not so learned in that, but I know that it's important. Eating yogurt with fruit is a common thing in America. It's very common. But from an Ayurvedic point of view, it's not good. The sweet fruits are not to be mixed with the sour yogurt. That's combinations of foods. Your question was regularity or the timings. Yes.
What is the reason for not combining, like, say, yogurt and fruit?
Acidic. It's sweet fruits. The sweet fruits you can eat together, but you don't combine the acidic with the sweet fruits. That doesn't digest well. Another, Prabhupada taught us this, and I've heard it subsequently. Melon. Fruits in the melon categories, or watermelon, or muskmelon, or cantaloupe. The rule is, don't mix that melon with other fruits. But what Prabhupada said is, eat it alone or leave it alone. And later, you know, just kind of out of coincidence, the Ayurvedic physician mentioned the same thing in a different context. But they're, so foods have particular qualities, and I'm not enough conversant why, other than, you know, sweet things should be taken with sweet things and not with acidic things, because it the benefit that you can derive from the, this is my limited understanding, the benefit that you can derive, nutritional value that you can derive from apples and peaches and grapes and fruits of a sweet variety, the nutritional value is diminished significantly by the acidic quality of yogurt. So, but it's common, you know, for breakfast. Fruit and yogurt. Anything else? Yes.
The remnants of food eaten by a sentient elevated deity.
Yeah.
If some remnants are lying there and if we have desire to take it, should we just take it or should we seek permission? Because in one of the lectures I have heard that we should seek permission of the sentient person before.
Yeah. Well, it's not... It's not a rigid thing. You know, courtesy should be exercised.
It is just lying there.
Courtesy should be exercised as a rule of life. But it's not like, you know, in a fanatical sense, I there's some Mahaprasadam and I can't take it unless I ask permission. No. Just courtesy should be extended. All right? Anything else? Okay.